Support with the nice one, like from the team from Wildwood Harbour Derby, we're here to launch new last time. So, from the group, we've got Stan McVeigh, Paul McKeown, Kieran Grant, and Jonas, and I'll be handing over for a presentation, 10-15 minute presentation, and a quite substantial session just after this week's action. Just before I go on to apologies, it's great to see fantastic good news stories about a number of businesses right across the district. It's always good to see people being so successful in the area of the district. So I just want to congratulate a couple of businesses. We've NJM, who secured our work on a complete refit of the Basel Power Pursuit cruise ship development. And as it leaves, the first time the cruise ship has been refitted, completely refitted in Northern Ireland. So great news story there. Also, Stan Sports. Another early based company, and it's brilliant news regarding the international sports contracts newly announced this month, and good to see that they're going to be working on the upcoming World Cup. We've also news of two awards across the district, and Cocoon Rose won the best in his team at the Danny Awards. Congratulations to them. And CTS Projects, they won the Drummond contract of the year. So well done to all them businesses. Also, just another brief note, the Tourism Industry Day in Canada called last month was a great success. It was over 140 businesses. So I want to put on record congratulations to all the council staff that worked on that, and especially Michelle White, who played a lot of effort. So we move on to apologies. Any apologies?
If
he does come up, he'll come there as an
apology.
Moving on then to declarations of interest.
Sure. I'm one of the ones that I've read those reports, but I've mixed them up in the country.
Okay. Thank you. Whose apologies for that? Any other declarations of interest? No. We move on. Item 3, the ERT action sheet. And we've just gone through this page by page. So we've got page 1, page 2, and page 3. Any matters arising? Can I get a proposal second? Proposed Davey and second, Councillor Hannah. No matters arising? Okay, we're moving on to item 4, which is the presentation by Wildwood Harbour Authority. I'm going to hand over to Stan McVeigh to kick off the presentation.
Mr. Chairman, members of council, on behalf of Wildwood Harbour Authority, I'm pleased to present the draft support master plan for information. Wildwood Harbour has a pivotal and very important role to play in the region's economy. We are the second largest port in terms of volume of traffic, which is handled in Northern Ireland, the fifth on the island of Ireland. In 2017, the port handled 3.5 million tons of cargo. Its value was 6.3 million tons. The UK assisted in the European Union in 2016 presented the port with significant challenges and uncertainty regarding future trade, and this master plan is designed to strengthen the port's position as a major trade hub for the island's economy. And the major regional economic driver, we must ensure a balance between economic need and the environment in which we operate. We have adopted a certain approach in the preparation of this plan. We are very grateful and encouraged by the initial feedback we received in the development of these proposals. This plan is being rolled out today and will be rolled out for the next 3 or 4 weeks. There will be a public consultation in Warren Point in the coming weeks. Without any more ado, I'm going to hand over to my chief executive, Claire Innes. Claire was appointed as CEO of Wildwood Harbour Authority in January of this year.
Thank you, Stan. Hi, thank you, Stan. Just by way of a brief outline of what we hope to cover today, I'm just going to cover some of the existing operations and the economic impact that the port makes. And then I'm going to pass you on to Paul McKinnon from SLR Consulting, who's going to take us through the master plan process. And then Kieran Grant, our finance director, will take us through some of the key deliverables and priorities, including the slide on Brexit. In terms of existing operations, then, as Stan was saying, Warren Point is the second largest port in Ireland, or Northern Ireland, sorry. The ultimate responsibility of the board is to safeguard the assets and hand it on to the state in the same or better condition to succeeding generations. The port must exercise its function with regard to nature conservation and environmental considerations, acting in its capacity as a conservator of the loch. Our largest cargo by freight is sea trucks, roll-on, roll-off freight service, with a twice daily scheduled service to and from Haitian. It's estimated that it is estimated by the Harbour Authority that up to 40% of the throughput begins or ends its journey in the Republic of Ireland. In terms of imports then, just to give a visual, most of the imports that the port deals with come from England, Scandinavia, the Baltic, France, Spain and Italy, to name the main ones. And in terms of exports, they are again going to England, or ex-Northern Ireland should I say, going to England, but also to Sweden, Spain, Jersey and Scotland. The port is an important economic regional driver, as Sam mentioned. We increased cargo volumes by 2.3 million year on year to 3.56 million tonnes in 2017. The total value of this throughput was £6.2 billion. It draws out economic activity to the coastal and rural community. And in terms of GVA, in 2016, the port's GVA was 3.7 million. In terms of there's a jobs multiplier and an economic multiplier, just proving that the port, for every one job that the port directly creates, 2.5 jobs are created in the local economy. And for every pound of income earned by port staff, £2.10 is spent in the local economy. There are 67 employees directly of the port, over 200 people working on the harbour estate, and last year we dealt with just under 1,000 vessels. Now I'd like to pass you on to Paul, who'll go through the master plan process.
Thank you, Claire. The port's master plan is a non-statutory plan. It's not like your development plan, is not required by statute, but it is an advisory best practice thing to do set out by the government. It is particularly so because of the status of the port in terms of its position, and the Department of Infrastructure has guidance as to how the port has to kind of set out a 25-year vision for its port operations. So it's doing this because the port is just coming off probably one of its most successful years with very considerable growth. There is a trend of growth right across the island within the port sector, which it has to respond to. It has to inform its customers and its shipping agents as to its infrastructure plans, and it has to inform authorities such as yourselves, who are involved in strategic planning, as to what to expect from the growth of the port over that 25-year period. The method, the diagram there on the right-hand side, is the process we have to go through to make the plan. And we've been through all the baseline assessments and the operational review. We've done the trade growth forecast, which I'll talk about in a moment. And we're now into the draft proposals. And as Stan mentioned earlier, these are going out to consultation this week. We are launching a process of engagement, which we've been discussing the plan with customers and primary stakeholders for the last year or so. But you will notice adverts appearing in the local press on the 17th and 18th of April. The plan will be on display in the local libraries, it's published online. And we're holding an exhibition, which you're all very welcome to, on the 2nd and 3rd of May in the Crown Dock right on the square in Warren Point. And we'll be running and receiving comments up until the 18th of May. You'll be familiar, most of you, with the configuration of the port. This diagram just, I suppose, emphasizes the constrained nature of the land estate that the port has. It also shows you the constrained nature of the channel, of course, and the issues that the port has with remaining operational in terms of its dredging requirements. But maybe in this diagram, the only thing I want to draw your attention to at the moment, because I'll come to it a little bit later, is the area up by the roundabout at the very top of that diagram, which is known as the guts. This is the only area, really, port side capable of being reclaimed over a 25-year period in terms of the port estate slightly been able to extend itself. Looking at trade forecasts, there has been a trend since 2010 right across the island in terms of economic recovery, and given that 40% of goods coming through the port goes to the Republic, that's been a huge driver of a trend of growth which is reflected both in the north and the south, which the port responds to. Now, the three lines in the top graph there show you the forecast we've identified for a strong growth, which it could be as much as an 80% increase in throughput through the port by 2040. through to a Brexit economic shock scenario, which is the bottom one, which has modelled a 30% hit on port traffic if a hard Brexit scenario was the outcome. We've taken, not surprisingly, the middle line there, and we've projected our trade increases on the basis of that. Now, for Roro, which is the port's main business, that's about 55% of increase in traffic over that period. Now, directly translated into landside requirements, that puts pressure on the port to find somewhere between 4 and 6 hectares of new storage land. And I'll come back to that in a moment when you consider how constrained the estate is. The trade assumptions, as I say, they are all island. They look at the way the ports operate, and they build in certainly the initiatives that have been taken elsewhere, particularly in Dublin and Belfast, who have increased their share of low traffic. But there still is a very sizable market for Warren Point in respect, particularly of its access to its natural cross-border hinterland. So there's a range of issues there on that slide that all inform the trade assumptions, but you know, the key issues are at the bottom there. They're all about connectivity and links to the cross-border hinterland. It's about having a diverse portfolio of cargoes and customers. It's about being competitive in terms of cost and tariff. And it's about maximising the space that we have to work in. So, the trade forecast sit alongside what we call an operational review. And this is where we look at actually how the port manages its fixed assets. And this is all about sea access, road access, you know, the efficiency of the quays, the turnover times, the storage areas, the age and fitness of the cargo handling equipment, and IT systems and all of those things. Suffice to say that it's the top two issues of the big ones. Sea access, in terms of the dredging regime, is critically important to the trend towards slightly larger vessels and quicker turnover times. And road access is vitally important for us in terms of the hinterland. This image, again, those of you familiar with the port will recognize that this image was taken at low tide. It shows you how constrained the channel is in certain sections, and it shows you again the constraints on the narrow configuration of the state of the estate. And you can see there in the aerial photograph the turning circle, which is critically important to the vessels just outside the town dock. So the strategic planning issues we can summarize as being number one, it's about resilience and confidence in the face of Brexit. It's about access to the cross-border hinterland. The relief road is absolutely critical to future competitiveness of the port. So the southern relief road for the port is vitally important, and it's number one infrastructure requirement. And that sits alongside the need to achieve the maximum efficiency and its ability to maintain the channel. So we then look at growth of the business side in terms of diverse portfolio, the tariff, keeping it competitive, and utilising the estate as best as we can, with continuous improvement and investment around systems and port infrastructure. So the master plan, you'll get a copy, will be issued to all of the members tomorrow by post. You'll get a hard copy, you'll be able to read it in detail, but it breaks down into doing 5 key things. And this is improving transportation and circulation to and within the port, improving port capacity and operations, growing the customer base, developing linkages with the town with some interesting new ideas, and developing a long-term strategy for expansion. It's very important that the master plan looks even beyond the 2040 period in terms of the maintenance and management of the channel. So objective one, there's one slide per objective here, so I'll swiftly take you through these, give you the highlights. The Southern Relief Road options, I believe in the last few weeks there's been further refinement of these. The port is very supportive of this. We probably prefer the blue routes, if you're familiar with the options. But whichever one is vitally important in terms of accessibility. If you think those trade forecasts will bring 60, possibly 80,000 new HGVs going through Newry. As the port grows its traffic, it's very, very important to the competitiveness of the port that that's achieved. One of the other issues, which is the diagram on the bottom left, has taken a look at the whole rationalisation of access to the port itself. And we have looked at the feasibility of bringing an access off the main roundabout, as you arrive into one point, and putting a one-way system in place. And that requires the infilling of the area known as the Gut. And we know this area is the landing point for the Narrow Water Bridge, and we've had the engineers look at it in terms of how both can be accommodated in this space. So that's something you'll like to take a closer look at when we get the full copies of the document. Improving port capacity is about introducing a new zoning approach to the port, where it introduces four functional areas which just make the running of the port so much more efficient, with the emphasis here on the growth and development, in particular of the RoRo terminal and the general cargo terminal, which is the area in blue. And there's lots of things the port can do in terms of efficiencies. You will see over the next number of years there'll be a lot of demolition and removal of buildings to try and make that space as efficient on the dock side as possible. The customer base is very important in terms of the port working well for its customers. And the big issue here for us is the review of the dredging regime. At the moment, the port has to take and place its dredging material 14 miles out to sea. It's highly expensive, it's very difficult to maintain. With ships getting bigger and turnover times increasing in terms of cargo throughput, the demands on dredging will be constant. So the port is looking at an option for an in-lock placement proposal later this year, which it will be in discussions with the department about. So that's all about remaining competitive with the customer base. In terms of linkages with the town, there's quite an exciting idea to develop the dock house, the town dock building on the corner of the square, and open the railings to provide public access to the marina. That image on the screen there is part of work that architects have already been commissioned to look into in terms of the feasibility of that. And again, that's an early proposal in the master plan in terms of bringing new administration offices into the town square. Finally, the master plan must look at even proposals beyond 2040. And here what we have to do is take a look at where we can get deeper berths, where we can get alongside. And really, again, because of the channel, the two main options are to develop more berths along the RoRo berth, or develop the general cargo area. There is one proposal on here, which is an interesting one, which was brought by our engineers, and that was the idea of building a terminal on the other side of the channel. Now, that's quite normal for estuarine ports, and indeed, the port of Derry, if you're familiar with it, already has assets on the other side of the foil in Donegal, so it's not totally off the wall, but it is a post-2040 idea, which may or may not materialise. But from the engineering appraisal, these options appear in the master plan at this stage, purely as implied as long-term options. So when all plans are implemented, the port doesn't expand that much. We are much more efficient in using the estate, but we do propose the reclaiming of the Gut, which is in the top of the diagram up there, but also introducing new traffic, new circulation proposals, which we'll see, as I say, a lot of the land assets being rationalised, a lot of the non-conforming uses being acquired and consolidated, and the whole operation becoming altogether more efficient. So that diagram is what all the measures implemented would look like. And again, we have the new port offices moved from inside the port right up to the heart of the town. So I'll hand you over to Kieran Grant just to take you through the key deliverables that come out of the master plan.
Okay, thanks, Paul. So I'll just go through these very quickly. Paul's covered a lot of them already. So the first key deliverable is we need immediate assistance to fund our capex. So we've built up reserves over the last number of years, but even that's not enough for the work that we want to do. So we are looking borrowing, and we've already started that process, so that we can then appropriately need to replace cranes, forklifts, modernise our fleet, and also, as Paul was saying, remove buildings, so that's going to cost a lot of money, and that's already underway. The Southern Relief Road, the second one there, again, Paul covered that very well. And we would say it's not just the relief road, it's an economic road. And we do believe that because of the nature of Warren.4 done, it can't really grow much further. But there is a real opportunity if the Southern Relief Road is there, that particularly on the eastern side of Newry, the INI lands and further afield, you know, we can get to the port very, very quickly from there, from the port up to there, and that could be from a rail logistics hub in the future. So the Southern Relief Road is very, very important, and as councillors, you'd be aware from the quality of life, that whole argument in terms of taking traffic away from the city. Paul's already mentioned then the potential revision of the dredging license, and we have engaged environmental specialists to look at this. There'll be a lot of science undertaken over the next year, and if and when that decides that, you know, an application, a license is feasible, we will be going to the Northern Ireland Environment Agency and possibly at the public consultation if we decide that it is possible to have in-lock placement. And then just another one, just particularly because we have been working with the council on this in the past, is that the marina is still on the cards, and Warren Harbour would provide the assets, the outer breakwater and the inner breakwater, supported by the council's own car park there. It already gives three sides to a town dock marina, so I suppose seeking funds for that is the issue, but you know, we're still prepared to work with the council to try and seek funding on that. Right. So just to go through this, what's going to happen in the next 24 months? The CapEx is about spending money on cranes. One crane will cost us $2.3 million. We will get another refurb about at least $500,000. Our forklifts will be updated, shunters, shovels, all will be updated. The town dock is going to happen very soon, as Paul said. We've already engaged architects to look at that, and hopefully opening up the town dock area during the daytime at the very least for the public. The site clearance has already started, and if you drive down the Warren Quay, you can see some work's going on. But that's to help us to grow our customer base. We need as much land as possible, particularly because of Brexit looming. Finally, as I said earlier, we have already undertaken, we've been appointed specialists to look at this in our placement. And then one further slide just on the court's position on Brexit. I suppose that we're absolutely clear that we want to continue to support frictionless trade. So no border of the Irish, it's north, south, or east, west. So we want to ensure that trade continues to flow and grow, and support improved connectivity. And it's that sort of nod again to the Southern Relief Road, particularly in as Brexit looms, we need an infrastructure project like that. And because we are limited in terms of space, if there is these customs clearances and things like that, we would be saying you can take that, do it elsewhere, do it inland, and these inland clearance depots, there's very little or no room for those checks to happen actually within the port. So what are we doing, and what have we already started doing? We are creating as much space as possible in case cargo has to lay down longer before it needs customs clearance to move away. We have an obligation to work with the customs. We have to provide them facilities if they ask for it, and that could be UK Border Control, it could be customs officials, HMRC, it could be DARA. So we have to provide that. So we'd be looking at spaces and areas where we can provide those. And certainly we'd be looking at our IT systems to modernise those to help trade move quickly and as freely as possible. And I suppose our overall aim, and it always has been a little bit, you know, is to manage and maintain and improve the port for the future, regardless of Brexit. So we always hope there will be trade, the port will be acquired, and for us to manage and maintain that and improve it as best we can.
Thank you, Kieran. Just a way of conclusion then, the master plan implementation has benefits regionally, as the port is a key link in the supply chain on an island economy. Locally, there will also be benefits such as the improvements in port town interface, post town dock regeneration. We do have some challenges ahead. The in-lock placement programme is critical, as is the delivery of the Southern Relief Road. We very much appreciate the Council's support, and we require ongoing support to deal with Brexit and leverage the port asset as best we can for all stakeholders. And finally, we'd like to build on the existing strong relationship and continue to work collaboratively for the socio-economic development of the region. Thanks very much for your attention. If anybody's got any questions on the port master plan, please feel free.
Thanks, Sarah. Just follow up question, I suppose, in terms of your master plan. The difficulty is just to put up a site until there is a problem on the unknown of Brexit. And as I have an import export business, we currently import to the port of Dublin. And for the unknown as well, we don't know whether we're going to move north or not. So, you know, putting together a plan, we don't really have space to hold for customs. But on a day when we're advertising for customs posts, and we still don't know what way that's going to, you know, work out. And so it's quite difficult for businesses, quite difficult for the board itself. It's definitely an asset that we could use as a business. And a lot of businesses in this economic corridor could use, and I agree that the Southern Way Co is absolutely crucial to that. So open to the floor for questions, Harry.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair, just a couple of comments, basically. Your biggest seems to be Scottish Apple.
So our biggest freight is actually the roll-on, roll-off, so that it all comes in and on a company vehicle from Haston. That's 60% of the port's trade. The other 40% is mixed up between cement, certainly, yes, grain, timber, steel, and yes, there's some scrap as well in there as well, yeah.
Your roll-on, roll-off. That's mostly sealed. Does it come both ways or is it?
Both ways, twice daily scheduled service from Haitian, yes. So that's between just ourselves, one point from Haitian.
And one way from others? Yes.
The ferry can only accommodate, it's mainly on a company traffic, so it can accommodate 12 people travel. Now, they're usually very, very big, but it does care for it.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the presentation and the whole discussion on your master plan. I think that's got to be welcome. It's very good. I hope to see it signed up in 2043. Let's see it and there was reference to a few of the issues that are there, and there are some issues that will affect. On your very first slide, I think you talked about protecting the nature and the environment, and also discussed your relationship with the local residents and so on. I think in particular, I remember the dredging issue, where you're looking to dispose of dredge materials within the lock could be a very big issue going forward. And the even filling in the gut because of these environmental issues that no doubt you will be faced with. But you're quite aware of those. And Kieran also made reference to, I do see the bank, which was purposely built, I think, to share what was going on in the docks behind it. It looks quite well from the 50, I have to say. I'm just wondering how it would look in a while. Are you planning building or simply storage down there? I would welcome the idea of a second main road and their own internal traffic system. I think that would probably be good and has the potential to make that stretch of road a lot safer. You know, if they were accessing onto the roundabout or the roundabout needs to be made bigger. But I'm just wondering in the long term, I know there was some gas tanks to go in around there yet, but what would that look like from the 50 and a year or two?
There's an extensive tree planting programme which you won't have seen commenced just yet, but that's exactly what we're getting ready for.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that, well, not for a couple of years, but in a few years' time, we've got indigenous trees and quite a lot of them coming in right along that whole stretch. In the meantime, there'll be a fence put up there as well. Yes, we are hoping to have the CO2 plant coming on site in the near future. In that area, and also to put perhaps There's an option to put some modular offices in there as we demolish the operations building, which is currently on site, and move sort of some of the agents and offices to the periphery, like ourselves with the town dock on one side and the other periphery, perhaps some of the agents, as we try and make it to increase the port capacity and also make the port safer by having less workers actually in the busy hub of the quayside.
I welcome your comments too about the marina, and you get the impression sometimes that people have forgotten about it. And there was some discussion recently about renewing the planning application. I'm not sure whether that's some process or not, but it should go ahead, I think. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks,
just a welcome to all of you. I was thinking of the obviously Michael's on that area, the two issues that got on the situation that would be sold up in the past. That's always going to raise concerns with a lot of people. And we've seen in the past where there was certain aspects of what's going on, however, created quite a lot of publicity, wasn't it, and quite a lot of concern. So whatever happens in relation to that, the most open and transparent process that you can do needs to take place at that stage. I did notice some of the slides that wasn't put on was the traffic camera on the A2. You know, just wondering what sort of your thoughts were around that there. Obviously, also welcome the opening up of the time that I think that would help greatly. And there's no doubt from what was previously done on the event a number of years ago when the wall was taken away and the fence put there and the boats are in around it. It goes up really well, so opening that up would help. But I have to also say that I've been in touch with the harbour over not many years in relation to the dust problems that exist, and those residents who live nearby who are continuously having to clean dust off their properties, their houses, their windows, etc. That is something that I think the harbour needs to keep on top of, and it needs to be at the top of your priorities as well, because it does cause great concern to the residents that are being affected. But I do welcome the, obviously, the moving forward, but the harbour is important to the town. And vice versa as well. So the two need to work side by side, and however that can happen, I think it needs to continue.
And maybe just with regard to the dust issue itself, we actually just got another dust compression system arrive on port just last week. So that's something that we are acutely aware of, and we're always constantly reviewing what's out in the market and what can we do to try and make that situation better. And as you say, we need to coexist and we need to certainly minimise any potential effects that the harbour operations have in the local community, and we are acutely aware of that. And another statistic that maybe I skipped over quickly, but 97% of the staff, the 67 staff that work on the port, actually live within 3 miles of the port. So it's not only just the local community, is our staff as well. So it's absolutely right up there, and it's paramount for us. So thanks for that. Paul, maybe you would do with the traffic cameras.
Yeah, we've you'll see when maybe if you pop into the exhibition, you'll see we've prepared drawings showing what could happen to the A2, and you know it's all about getting the safe track in lane, and it is about getting the track, getting the speed reduced from 60 for that section of dual carriageway inside the roundabout, which you know the customers have told us that the drivers are telling us is inherently dangerous to them. So we have prepared proposals for a one-way system where the traffic can come off the roundabout, come into the port through a completely new entrance, and then be managed to emerge at the existing access with a right-only option. And we have got traffic engineers prepare the drawings for that, and that's going to go into a conversation with the Department for Infrastructure and in terms of trying to make the road just a safer place and easier for the stacking of lorries and for the arrival of them and the exit of them. One of the things we are acutely aware of in terms of bringing a new access in is this issue of, you know, if we need a stacking strategy, and that's what really worries us about the current configuration of the A2. It's just not equipped to do that. The new entrance we've looked at gives us lots more options in terms of that scenario. Again, it's all concerned to operational issues that we don't fully understand yet in terms of the implications of the port operating in a different way post Brexit. But we can share those with you if you come to the exhibition.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Joe. And again, thank you very much for the interesting presentation. Seems a sort of a fresh start in a sense of the moving board. But so I suppose we'll always have to give you as much support as we can from the council perspective. Certainly, but I just was interested here, you know, I know you talked about a hard Brexit would probably mean a downturn of a maximum 30%. There was some sort of talk about, you know, the port being in danger, or, you know, ultimately this thing meant totally askew. So just to knock that on the head, or use an imagination on that. The other part is, I just was looking at, I remember listening here to a previous presentation where I understood that the GOP was going to be developed in some small wording that I think I remember at one stage of it, so obviously that's been changed, or the record has been changed slightly on it. I also say that as well, that, you know, there is, you know, you talk about the, I suppose, you're certainly degree, you're entering the Mourns, you know, down the One Point Road visitor thing, so, in a way, before I can ask him, you know, with the cooperation of all visitors around there, the port isn't easy, eh? We all know that, the type of building, cranes, etc. But again, I welcome you, your, maybe, the liaison with the council or councillors in an effort to maybe do, you know, review the planning and improve the visual impact as you under one point, because that's very important for us, the areas we're trying to develop our tourism strategy, visitor strategy. So, and it's also just the in-lock placement, that was, I suppose, a different way of dredging, is it? I seem to pick it up as a conversation in the detail that's going on, so I just wanted to hear more of that. We were concerned about, you know, putting such a wide road that we were considering imposing, you know, some sort of speed limit. You know, that was sometimes just a result of chopping up tickets for, you know, speed cops, you know. So I would say that in a public wide road event, we, you know, will have, I would say, that opposition, but it depends on you. Start
and
finish it.
So
just caution on that one.
You know.
So thank you and wish you all the best.
Thanks very much. If I maybe just take the Brexit part of that, and maybe Pauline might deal with the gut. And certainly with regard to the planting and liaising with the council generally, would absolutely confirm that we will be doing that. There's no question about it. In terms of Brexit generally, look, ports are considered all over the world as being strategic economic assets. There's no doubt, and we did have economic assessments just to show the value of what Warren Point Harbour brings to this local area. So whilst there's a downside in this report where they've talked about a 30% reduction in a hard Brexit scenario, there would of course be opportunities in a hard Brexit scenario too. There's a significant volume of traffic already going to Southern Ireland that in a hard Brexit scenario would have to come north if tariffs, etc. were applied. So we're not in the business of sitting back and waiting idly to see what happens to the port. We will be out on the front foot. And if hard Brexit does happen to come, we will certainly be fighting for more trade and more business. So I do see the port as being certainly an asset with some longevity, and this master plan over the next 25 years speaks to that in terms of we have a growth plan, we're developing, we're not sitting idly by, and we certainly think that the whole council and the whole area is benefits from having the port as an important contributor to the supply chain in this area.
Just on your to sweep up a couple of comments in relation, for example, to the GUT and the reclamation of that section can easily accommodate a new key site for leisure use as well as the accessibility from the roundabout. So they're not exclusive one bit. You know, that can there are, I know there have been some discussions with the boat owners, etc., about relocating, and that's perfectly manageable in terms of being accommodated as part of that proposal. And as I say, the engineers that have looked at that have also looked at the whole, you know, they've been very sensitive to any prejudice to the Nile Water Bridge project, which again, you know, if you fill the duct, you're almost a third of the way across the channel. So it should be manageable. In terms of screening and visual impact, all of the ages of the port, the master plan has, you know, is, will try and soften as much as it can the ages of the port. And there is room built into the planting corridors to get as good as we can achieve, given the position. Because there is huge sensitivity to the arrival into the town. And on the issue of dust as well, and all those immunity issues, there are operational practices where there's a whole host of recommendations in the master plan to do with dust suppression. And you know, the arrival of the new system is all part of addressing those immunity issues. So we're trying to make the port as comfortable, as good a neighbour as possible that it can be in the town.
Thank you. A very interesting presentation there. But I didn't notice that they had any interest in maybe encouraging cruise ships come in. Is that not a way to get down to another benefit to the board?
Sorry, it wasn't specifically mentioned in the master plan, but we have shown our wholehearted support, and in fact our cost and our resources behind, but alongside the council behind Cruise One Point. We just had Katrina, our harbour master, has just spent some time in Miami. She's got two further trips planned this year. We're trying as best as we can to attract cruise business to One Point.
Just one more question from the program.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yes, I look at all these great improvement plans, and you have mentioned port storage. Is there any consideration to develop later storage facilities going down the road instead of coming towards Uray? The moment is a frame space for that type of thing. Also, Robert, I was going to ask about the cruise ships, but also the possibility of developing a tourism passenger roll-on, roll-off ferry. Because on either side of the Belfast map, you know, we're getting quite a bit of transport to and from England with a ferry, with our transport. And, you know, people from this area are traveling to there. Is there any future plans for developing that type of thing in this area? And my last point is, to go along with the marina and the existing groups, would the increased business be having a major impact or restricting the existing groups? I think of the likes of the Charleston and the Sailability groups that operate there. Thank you.
And maybe just to get Nicole, I'll defer to your superior knowledge of the master plan and to maybe help me out with some of this. But we've looked at a lot of storage options from where the port is right down into Tintinuri, and to be honest, there just aren't many, which is why we're probably so excited and about the delivery of Southern Relief Road, because we see that opening up substantial lands on the eastern side of Uray that would only be a 10-minute drive from the port, facilitated by the new road, in order to give us, you know, some more storage and some more facilities off site, which would be fantastic for us. Have you anything to add to that, Paul?
I think there's an interesting precedent that's been set by Dublin Port, who developed what they call a land port in Fingal by Dublin Airport. And it's a very interesting idea where they're basically bringing the freight up through the tunnel and they're distributing it onto the national road network at the M50. And there's an opportunity, I suppose, for Warren Point Port to possibly think a little bit like that in terms of having a logistics centre which is on the A1-M1 corridor because of its link to the hinterland, because that's where most of the traffic comes from. But it involves the port stepping outside of the state and getting involved in partnership with others to develop that. That said, we've looked at all the available sites within Warren Point and in the corridor between Warren Point and Uray. Now, I have to confess, we didn't go past the Strever to take a look at what those options might be, and to maybe have a look at what there may be there as part of that. But given that the hinterland is on the A1-M1, I think strategically that would be the preference for the port to be up on the main motorway. you know, with a facility enabling access to the whole cross-border region from that point, because of the obvious logistics. In terms of the marina proposal, again, I mean, I don't think we anticipate any negative impact on existing users. If anything, the offer across the leisure groups and indeed even the fishermen should all improve with it. But we do think that the town dock, the idea of moving to the town dock offices, the opening of the railings, being able to get to the water's edge, will have a huge regeneration benefit on the square, and we think that's a really valuable contribution the board can make. But in terms of user groups, we don't foresee any. We certainly haven't anticipated any downside. Well, the roll on, roll off. Now, when we did the market assessment, we didn't come across any demand-led evidence for a service. Now, that's not to say that I think the board would be delighted if we could develop one. But we didn't find any support from the main shipping lines to develop that service. And I think we would be open-minded to it if it emerged. But certainly, in terms of the facilities, even at the Sea Truck Terminal, it's quite possible that that can be easily accommodated. I thought the pier maybe you're better on that.
Just a small comment on that. The Sea Truck that operates the rural facilities only use it 6 hours a day, so there's a window of opportunity for another provider. The difficulty is getting that provider. We have the facility there to accommodate passenger ferries.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman. Just a very quick point. I should have mentioned also that the acknowledged and public record the thanks from the local group that we organized the files to say from the Halloween Festival that what was in Friday Harbour facilitated on the key it wouldn't be possible to turn it those works. So I think that's your ahead for the
Thank you. And actually, just to close the scalability point, although scalability currently uses the town dock house where we're looking to move, we're going to provide another facility for them because we absolutely we supported 35 different community events and initiatives last year, and we certainly need to continue to do that, and we want to continue to do it because it's our community as well, so we will be facilitating scalability going forward.
Yeah, just to say thank you, Mr. Chairman and Councillors, we're very grateful for your time. If there's one takeaway from this presentation today, that I would implore you to remember that whilst 200 people are employed directly in the port for the Warren Point, there are hundreds of people who rely on the port for their job and their business. And so what we're about to embark upon in consultation with our neighbours, and we're hugely aware of environmental issues and some of them raised here, we do our very best to resolve those, but the economic impact of the port is absolutely paramount to the region. Thank you very much.
Just before we finish up, just a few comments. I suppose you were saying that 60% of the day it comes in or it's low on the road. And I'd be keen to see, especially with Brexit on the horizon, an increase in the lift on the road. And I suppose there's a perception of business out there, and there may be a perception of my business and the whole of the business. I do believe that Warren Point Harbour was just literally for the reason coming on and off, and the lift on containers is key going forward. I suppose it's probably a thing of space and storage. I know a lot of residents in the border region, in the country of Dublin, I think up across the British Towers, that's something that's changed. And it's how Warren Point is competitive with Belfast Harbour. So I suppose going forward, I look forward to getting the pack of the last plan of the post, and hopefully we can do some business going forward. But I want to just thank you for the presentation today and taking a lot of questions. So Claire, Stan, Paul, and Kieran, thank you very much. And it's
thank you.
Okay, moving on to item 5, we've got the ERT business plan 2018 and 2018.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members will need a copy of the proposed ERT business plan for the incoming financial on the way, and actually financial year in. You'll also receive a review of the Enterprise Regeneration Tourism Directorate business plan for 2017. 2018. I'll ask you just to note that within the business plan, the planning and building control regulation are also included. They will be considered by the Regulatory and Technical Services Committee. I'm not going to go through the business plan in detail, but the decision is the decision required that the members agree to the business plan as presented, but I'm certainly happy to take any questions or considerations.
Yeah, just before I go to the floor, Marie, just a few points on the business plan. The arts and culture strategy that's been developed, has all strategies that have been developed, is that going on to, you know, for scrutiny?
Sure, the arts and culture strategy, like the tourism strategy, will go through the ERT committee. We have just appointed the consultants to deliver on that, and we'll be commencing consultation across the district. But we will bring back a more detailed plan. We just have to do the initial meeting with the consultants to establish just a programme.
Okay, just another 2 points just before we go to the floor. It's stated in the plan on page 12 that there's about three growth plans, first renewal applications to the ODP, and how do we go through the various village plans and priorities? And just finally, just on page 17, the financial information, should the financial information that's on the application not include income?
Sure, in relation to the village plans, we're doing a piece of work at the minute, just reviewing the entire outcomes of the village plans that have been consulted, and we're looking towards how we can prioritise those and bring those back to the committee for consideration, so you will get further view of those at the village plans. In relation to the nationals, we follow the format of the other directors in the council. I appreciate though that it makes our budget look rather small, but our income is quite significant within the ERT directors. And I think we can take the income out, we'll call it the upper end £12 million of budget.
Thanks, Mr. Terry. Thank you, Chair. Just the business plan. I'm just asking that, or saying that there is serious consideration given to the civilian law, and particularly with the digital statistics on crowding and Fort Hill, Silver Bridge and across the mainland. Have to really be an embarrassment to the council. You know, so there's a serious need for the council in the business plan to concentrate on those areas, to take those areas up on a parallel of other areas. And I think there needs to be something on its own dedicated to that stakeholder or the income, the service, that would be within those entire ones, that we are at the very bottom. And like, there's an onus on this council to help us to come out of that, whether it's trying to get in and buying in the area or some sort of service of that. But I would like to think that would be a top priority for the council to work with local councils and business groups in that in the area to try and do something about that.
Right. Yeah, sure. I do take on board the comments, and we are aware of the levels of deprivation. Members will be aware as well that the Belfast Region 3 Daily Project is very much looking towards dealing with deprivation, and many of our programmes do also target areas of deprivation. So we can just add an additional comment into the business plan, which shows we leave it as areas of deprivation, but there are areas in the district which would be impacted by that as well, so we can add that into it. We
were going to
add that in
separately
into the
plan. Okay, thank you, Chair. And yes, I have a few questions and comments. On page 10, this is talked about the Tier 4 position that we're now being in place, and then we're going to Tier 5. I'm not sure. What is that actually? So is that we know what is actually happening, who they are, and what the role these things.
Sure, Tier 1, as you can imagine, is the chief executive, and then as the other tiers go down, you know, it's Tier
1. Yes, what do they think we're doing in Tier 5?
It could be the entire structure across your arts, culture, heritage, museums, your tourism facilities, you know, so we're just implementing the entire structure of the directors.
On page 11, talk about the plan and security order and consistent development plan, where we support the sustainable development. How is this going to be implemented?
What page are you on that one?
Page 11, on the iPad.
I suppose what we'll be doing is we'll be working along with with the creation of the plan and the control sections into the Enterprise Regeneration Directive, it does give us the opportunity to work very collaboratively in relation to the development of the entire Area 1 and Down region. So really that would be just us focusing on that. We have a significant piece of work going on at staffing level in relation to developing better connectivity and relationships between staff across the entire directorate, so that we all have the same sort of aim and ambition of creating a successful and prosperous district moving forward.
Yeah, I was interested in It's really concerning that there's only going to be 3 million new applications into our RDP program. But I hope that
that's the actual year.
1918. Systems. Okay, page 14, we're talking about implementation, we're going to implement street traffic legislation. This is just, and that's what I'm sort of saying, one thing more of it. I was lobbied by RNIB, as an institute of the brain. And certainly with the new traffic legislation, there's a big concern there about how, you know, that impacts on partially blind people, or disabled blind people, and how we are, could you assure me we're going to consult as a council with our NIB before we implement this?
Sure, that's something that we can definitely give consideration to, but can I just remind members that that section of the business plan is for consideration by the RTS direct, RTS committee as well, but it's certainly something we'll take on board.
Okay,
right.
That's it. Thank you.
Thanks,
Adam.
Any further questions for the business plan? Thank you. Proposal?
Proposal.
I'm sorry, Councillor Clark. Proposal, Councillor Warren. Second, Councillor Clark. Okay, moving on to item 6, and item 6 is Steve Volume, Sean Burgess, and John.
We've tried to come to a point there, looks at a number of options determined for the development of this facility. The committee would have considered this previously because we are developing the application or intensive for a mid to rural development tourism program as administered through the ERA headquarters. Terms so the recommendation is to proceed with. Over for a option, I think option C and D term where we would refer to the building and provide the certification term and have the facilities based on the original footprint.
Thanks, John. And just a wee bit of a background before we go to slow on this, and the four options that were there with the Ringy Bullion, I suppose the idea was that with the funding that we've already secured on the Ringy Bullion, to get using it and get the income that Sean has up and going and the interpretation set up. You know, with the extension. And at a later stage, we know that the interpretation trails are in the back. I know there was an opinion that if we go out looking for more money, we could lose what we have. So try and bank what we have, put it into Sean with us, and then we can develop it as it goes on. I suppose it's something I'd like to see going forward with the interpretation trails that we're talking about, using mobile phones and scanning codes. It's something we could develop across all of our forest parks going forward, and something I'd like to see going back to ERP. So that was the intention behind option 3B being proposed for our government. So,
the question is that why didn't the first two by the third amendment? I just threw it to the ground. But we did expect the ground cover the board at the moment.
Have you any comments? Can you get a proposal for
it? I think 940,000 already in the rates was. Presumably already agreed.
Yep.
But I just don't remember.
It's rolling up on the year, so you probably won't remember a big figure of time to set the loan.
Right.
Sure. 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 Sure.
move on to item 7, which is the skills forum update and the next steps on the skills forum and this memory. Do you think there's anything like that?
John. So, Chairman, if you have the analysis of the event there, Chairman, obviously the Council of Skills Economic Development Forum has established the skills forum. Our first meeting there in February of this year, Chairman, the report that it has key recommendations are to adopt the report and to move forward. Chairman, to carry an online survey, Chairman, that would help us, you know, join our views on the issues of skills gaps and the future skills needs addressed across a wider range of employers and schools. So, Chairman, that have been engaged today, and then obviously plan an event, Chairman, later in the year, Chairman, around September, around innovation in all schools and employers, Chairman, in the district. Yeah, thanks, John, and just a congratulations to the staff for putting on the event here. So, reading through the minutes of the event, you know, there was a lot of students there engaged, and there was a lot of feedback from it. I suppose it's one thing that I've been saying for years and years and years, working in schools, and I'm sure myself, that the fact that, you know, if we can get education and higher education on par with apprenticeships going forward, I think the whole education cycle needs to be looked at, and instead of promoting universities above skills, we do have a big skills gap. I suppose with City Deal, it's something that we want to deal with. But I think it's put in to look at and say to motivate and inspire young people to want to work in the district and to showcase the business that we have in this district and what opportunities are there out there. Because see, when you're at school and you're into a career in place, you know, you don't realise the business that's within there and the good work that's been done. We mentioned more than the staff and the other business areas that are of great work basins. So I think being an innovation event, which is September this year, that'll be really, really helpful going forward. I suppose a couple of other things coming out of it. Again, I suppose something that are right across the country, we need to look at. But if we can deal with basic skills, basic English, basic maths skills, that we can then move that money that is now going into that, to train the people with basic English and maths into improving more professional and technical skills. I just want to mention this on the forum.
Yeah, of course, I was not that. But I read that, honestly, I think we look back at the years to come, and it was one of the defining things that happened in our area in terms of, you know, the ability to link our young student population with the jobs that are, you know, that are needed and required to in this area. And also, it's really the truth that there's a massive gap existing between business and education, and that is quite well within that, you know. And if you look really, you know, at what's proposed as student placement improvement and, an alignment with the curriculum and the skills mix required in the area, and you talk about, you know, there's also reducing the deficit in terms of career service in the area. You know, teachers weren't aware in the schools of business requirements. And when you can see how this comes to stop our inclusion, you know, how that really will impact in this area going forward, you know. And you're looking at people leaving this area at the moment in taking work elsewhere, and possibly we'll be able to retain them if all we would be creating the proper structure and the environment where these skills are going to be appreciated and needed. So I think it's a good work, and commend the whole operation, hopefully
we'll bring
back, you know,
home. Thank you. Thanks,
Brian.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I would like to hope to ensure that we are also considering our vast facilities, the industries around the fishing industry, the opportunities for employment at all kinds of levels, that there were certain needs at the final seminars, because the fishing industry is on the upturn, and there is growing opportunity for employment within that. Plus all the ranges of engineering and paint and all the other skills that go along with that.
Chair, a number of representatives from the Kirkeel area were actually in attendance. Indeed, we had the Kirkeel Chamber of Commerce. We had Alan Henning from Rockwell Collins. I think there was actually somebody as well from an ethical maybe was in attendance. So we put a wide range of invites out right across the district, and we indeed want to encourage it right across the entire district.
Sorry.
quite a feature. So quite a tax on them, made quite a square, probably looking for the skills gaps that were actually addressed in it and being able to closure, and we're happy to do that. Thank you.
Excellent. Can you get a second one? Declan.
Very good, sure.
I think we would be looking back and saying this was a really good move, and I think it was good to come back and find a mentor career. I suppose it's to deal with that stigma of moving into apprenticeships or, you know, moving into education. It seems like there's a stigma that if you don't go to university, you're not achieving anything. And that's where the whole education cycle has to take a shift. But if you have businesses, really successful businesses in this district, that the first students don't know it. And some of us as members probably don't know it. Some of them coming in and presenting and making it, you know, really a lucrative way forward. I think it's excellent. I think it's something that hopefully it comes to its fruition. The more schools get involved, it's something we will look back and say, you know, here's part of the fact that also well on every. We've got a post time. Yeah. So moving on to item 8, which is the ODP village plans.
Just by sort of the level update in terms of where we are in terms of the development of those plans and then start seeking approval in terms of the next steps. So that's to do through the various stages of the procurement and the submission of the application in terms of how it's really moving through the process in terms of really taking it from the start to the finish. The key aspect there, and the answer to the earlier question was in terms of developing the applications. The work's currently ongoing, we're trying to solve through all of the various plans and pull out key things. In terms of we'll go back through this committee and the DEA forum, working with obviously the representatives of organisations and community groups that would have fed into the plans as well. So there's a fair degree of work still to be done there. However, what we're seeking approval is for the whole process in terms of making the eligibility criteria on the application process through the bank.
Thanks, John. I think it's key that the proposals on the project to be brought forward to be informed and discussion there. It's good to see that. And I suppose the comment that Terry had made in the previous paper with the areas that we represent said on the feature and definitely said part of the one of those measures of application in four of the top five that we'd be pushing very, very hard for projects in areas. Can I open the floor for comments or proposal in second proposed Councillor Perry?
In regards to gateway projects or proposals, is it possible to group? Maybe the villages have one sort of application.
So, Chairman, that was one of the comments in the area around the number of applications, and really that's what we're currently doing. As opposed to making applications by village, at the end is to try to spot out key themes. So, gateways would be one, probably, I know there's the AHC department up in the areas. As a theme, obviously, environment improvements and all that. So, we're looking at those kind of broad areas and run across the whole district as opposed to picking, you know, a specific project in a specific village. Because those may well fall out of the plans from the local community groups where they may go and try to source funds for something specific to a village that isn't in another village. But what we're currently looking at, we'll get our time to where it's open.
Okay, we've got a closing segment.
I was at the most of those, but three applications through, but I think 34 other finished ones, and I'm just, you know, I've intended a couple of those, and you know, the reports produced, which were excellent productions, you know, and I know, to an extent, those, the reductions that came out of all the conservation, I suppose, were kind of a there was a wish list going into the, you know, century probably in a sense. But I'm trying to think of, you know, what we can do. I'm trying to think, John, how much money is available this year in the 18-19 year. Just kind of a call back to what we have just put a call. But can we do, you know, sufficient work there that it actually do justice to the team?
So, Chairman, that's one of the decisions for our elected members tonight in terms of how far we make. What we're trying to do is look at the applications and how to get as good spread as possible, but it's not going to be possible to make every area fit in the application. You're going to have to work around things, because obviously the more these you do, you have to go through the procurement exercises for every, the more applications you put in, the more procurement exercises you're forced to run. But this was the bottom line is that you want to, you do want to get as broad a sweep across the business as possible, where all of the village plans get the some element of a project in it, you know.
Do you think we'll put any merit in, you know, in analysing all the village plans, then, you know, just say we can't do them also, some things, you know, consulting those things again, but, you know, and ask communities which would they, which is their preference, because I know fine well, you know, we will go to a stage for filling out books, using village plans and then get to look, that's all we did, you know, the 3 years, you need, you know.
But that is the exercise that's currently ongoing, is kind of pull out the key things and then to bring them back to the DEF board and to consult to set your book of proposals and bring forward and then back up to this committee as well. In terms of that exercise is currently ongoing.
Not necessarily back into the public.
But you wouldn't go back out to the public, Chairman. But it'll be back through the DEF board and the community groups that would fit in. Take to the village plan in terms of what we go back out of the thought to
do more. So I'm just saying
that in terms of the
details, but I'm just saying that there's a list of three objectives or whatever it is, and so see how they fit into it. You know, are they happy with that? You know, or just to take it from us that this is what's happening in the story. You know, their preferences, you know, they have a plethora of preferences in the village plan, but
I suppose that's
I know certainly you may have to get a reading from us, I suppose.
That's why I think it's very important we take back through the bonds, and you've got social partners in there from different parts of the community, because
yeah,
I do fear that you'll back out from the consultation and not get an agreement on the treaty when you're 23. Brian?
Yeah, Chair. I may be wrong, I remember once before, or years ago. That we were supposed to, when the village plans were compiled, go back out to the people who contributed them to allow them to view the village plan before it went ahead for publication. Was that not?
Yes.
No,
just for information, all of the new village plans are there and they're piled through the documents. So, all new village plans, I think there's been 15 of them. Yeah, on the EOT documents that we shot on that pad, so anybody wants to deal. Okay, we've got it. Did we get a proposal on second of that?
Yeah.
We did, yeah.
Chair,
yes, Mark,
I think in the recommendation, it's got a title which says Councillor Red eligible for the grant assistance of 75%, with 25% grant funding from Council. So we have a bit of a
that's with the council have to apply under the rules of the programme, the council have to apply for village renewal. So we apply to the departments, we get the 75% grant there, and then
it says
council
is going to be eligible for grant assistance of 75%. So we get 75% grant assistance and we pay the other
25%.
Okay. Moving on, we've got the proposal second, so moving on to item 9, which is the Brexit form of court, and this is following the Brexit form that was just set up.
This is the Brexit form which was suggested and recommended in November. So we have the first meeting of that. There has been a couple of recommendations coming out of that note within the report, and that's for the Brexit board members to attend Dublin to meet the citizens' representatives, and we would coordinate that through Dublin Council and the LEO down there. And then also to work with Queen's University. There was a recent town hall Brexit event in Uri, and it would be recommended that we work with them to potentially host such an event again. And that's obviously the non impact on the Brexit event that they're supposed to hold in the south side of the district.
Thanks
very much.
Brian, are you your leg off the last time?
Oh, sorry.
Who said we got a second one?
Yeah.
Gary, I've just been on the eye of that first time hall meeting and just gone on we're going to get just from the marketing, and most people thought it was in the final, and then there's some people there. So in the audience, the panel was actually an excellent event, but the panel was getting as big as the audience, so I just at the right side of the time on the agenda for the event. At the time of the first meeting, it was still that cancelled the first one from views. People there was moving the town hall meeting, but it didn't come across as extremely confused on the
Iran. Yeah, I'm sure that's the care of the event that was organised and run by Queen's University in London.
Absolutely. Okay, we've got the post on the side. Right, we're moving on to item 10, which is just for Milton from the development of the Belfast Corporation of Power Zone.
Yeah, Charlie, very good transport for TNA, trying to inform us of their plans to carry a consultation and review the search between Dublin and Belfast, the enterprise search, trying to look at frequency and the infrastructure in terms of the building. So, this is what they're recommending, trying to review the input of the consultation process.
Thanks, Charlie. So, to start with, you are welcome. Any attempt to improve the rail service from Dublin to Belfast, and I suppose our personal interest in saving the whole suffering over a small amount every morning by my husband who commutes down to Dublin and back. So I think cut down that time, but I fear probably the time that comes around, maybe not long. And second, it would be great, but it's been muted for a long time and it hasn't come to pass. At the moment, certainly, and you probably were sure yourself, but you get on the train and you're probably not too bad to make it a seat. The current people have to get on the dock and I'm standing with the train is really well used at the moment. But I think with the feedback as well, and something myself, just we not being met with TransLink back about the X1 service back in the summer, and it's something I had spoken to Ray about. Let's go for this 1 hour service in the train, if we can get that, obviously fantastic, but it's going to improve that X1 bus service that runs out of Dublin, particularly the fact that it calls at the airport. And again, in terms of local business people who use that to get to the airport, the busiest, the main airport on the island of Ireland, and it's only an hour away from us. When the service works very well, if we have a businessman who approached me and said, he's using that, and you turn off someone, the things fall to you, unless you're playing those. So, plus, I think I said the last time, sure, when we had the tourist board in, same thing, the amount of tourists that come in arrive in Dublin Airport. And if we want to get them into South of last night, then the opportunity is to get them from that onto that bus from the airport. And I think so if we can tack onto this as well, from the feedback, that if we can get improvements to what we're doing, that sounds like they're looking at one, the opportunity, more opportunities to book online for that service, but also there'll be more buses that would start and start in Gary and finish in Dublin. Vice versa, so that he didn't have this issue of the bus arriving in Uri full. So if we can tack them on to that, sure, appreciate it, thank you. My correct in saying, John, that this is, I know it's not going to go, but it's something on the bottom of this book, and it's probably as a member of myself, do you have any feedback on this?
Yes, sir, I'm not the big, if I back in the pilot of the stream on the process, yes, there will be some mechanism for opinion on that.
So you've got a proposal, right now?
No.
Close. Well, of course, okay, item 11 is the women's business.
In terms of this, a request by the Northern Ireland Women Appetite Challenge Fund, Chairman, to the 11 councils, Chairman, where they've developed a programme to promote women in the business. It's the proposal is being supported by the FDNA, the enterprise challenge from an undertaking contribution for the Latin Council's term to deliver the 3-year program. It's really taken existing programs and put us on the spoke and focus on promotion of entrepreneurship among females term. So the recommendation would be that the council support the program term, obviously subject to all the other councils being involved. The cost there is around £6,000 per annum over the next 2 years. Thanks, Tom. And just one question more about this law. Is it, I suppose you might know this of the other Latin councils, is it for the going to pay for the first year as well, sign up for the first year and the second after that?
Well, Tom, yes, that would be any arrangement you'd follow if you're on an ongoing basis, but they're all going through the, each of the councils going on through the same other process with their committees, and you know this one.
Tom, can I
propose them?
Yeah. Both then.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay. As per your budget, you have made an allocation for this and anticipate some of these requests coming forward, Chairman.
Can you just ask us to move forward?
Yeah.
So we go with this, what was the honor on the rest of this confidence?
So, Chairman, I've got the way up. It's a normal process for dealing with financial decisions, Chairman, so we go to them the council and then after that statement,
yeah. Yeah. It's just things that are scheduled because, you know, the funding and that's one. You know, I think it's good for professors to know who the outdoors are being together from our own information. So, I'm happy to get that there. Thank you.
Thanks, I can get one question with me as well. I don't know if the answer doesn't the same, but I suppose I was worried about the 10,000 technical across all four programs and is it the percentage of funding that they're looking for, or is it just
so, well, based on the application that the mental chart, they're all largely of a similar scale. You know, it's really around the council being involved, term, as opposed to they all have so different requirements and all have very different sources of funds. Term, all the gaps that they have identified, term, themselves.
Yeah, it's funny to see the council agreed this in January 2021, so it was agreed on the years from now. I'm just asking a table, you know, just to see if I'm decent away from that one. So we get a proposal, Sagna. Proposed action. Sagna. Tricky. Okay, item 13, which is the rural broadband update, and in the documents there was a lengthy report on broadband email studies. So,
Charlie, yeah, it's really the actual conclusion of the report from the previous term as well with recommendations. The key opportunity moving forward is there is a bigger like voucher scheme term inside, and we're working with those businesses across the district to promote that currently. And the report's already complete, so it will feed into further deliberation in terms of broadband upgrade and whatnot. It has been one of the programme that's recently worked.
Thanks, Alan. Just a couple of comments on the report. I'll include the report in detail yesterday. It's quite technical. Fibre to the man, fibre to the cabinet, fibre to the customer. It's quite prominent as well. I suppose for the next steps, is that on to community groups then to work in partnership with private organisations in order to look at rural areas in South Alabama, for example, in the North Sea, that would target fibre to the cabinet or fibre to the customer. Fibre to the mast would be a good project to go forward on. The sense of then stepping back from that. And so on that, it says that we can find pieces of infrastructure in townlands that would be high enough that would have line of sight to the houses. I think a lot of churches in rural villages would definitely be a goal for that. And I don't think you want to have a rent of 5,000 euro or whatever along the price of renting. Also, the other thing I wanted to ask was, well, if you want to back in that, and
So, Chairman, if you remember, the source of this piece of work was around
small amount of money that has been set aside in the rural broadband program to support rural broadband initiatives. Now, so since this piece of work kicked off, the department have issued all the evidence to hold on the development of projects or the implementation of projects arising out of this piece of work, given that fund has been secured through the conference. So, that's really the next stage, and the issue here is that they still have the research done, and it's supposed to kind of feed in and spark projects and develop projects arising out of that term.
The other point I just want to make for those as well there is, I thought the report was excellent, very informative, but it detailed all the next steps to open up to communities. I was disappointed with the maps. I know, if you're looking at some of the maps for areas that are less than 3 megawatts per second or 10 or 30, they don't look in the same place. But the areas that have super fast broadband seem to be the areas that have no connection as well. Looking in around South Armagh, so I sort of expected that there'll be a heat map in some of the areas, so I know it's difficult to try and then do it right across the district. But yes, I understand that it's a study that leads us ready to look at the future ways of delivering broadband in the rich areas, and it's future proof. So a lot of us will be lobbying for the money through the conference today, arrangement for those money set aside for broadband.
So the term, sorry, just the other thing is obviously the 78 is a major piece of target that is around connectivity. So I think this research will be fitted into that bit as well. So that's something that's ongoing as well. Brian.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Chair, once again, there's another report and another report fund to try and address a major problem. The people out there in the ground, the small businesses in rural areas, are fed up to the back teeth of this constant drip, drip, drip feed of what is basically rubbish. Because it's relying on more people to fill out application forms for these e-bitter funds. More people are sitting in the offices to assess them and to score them and mark them. Well, they want somebody out there putting down tables, not more paperwork. They're just wearing people out now, and people are getting totally disgusted. And I have to say, I'm one of them. Everybody for the broadband is very current, very slow. Even when you talk to some of the engineers and tell you, well, there's damage to the cable. But we'll speed yours up now. Well, how are you speeding up? Well, we just put you a fence cable and then we'll slow them down. It's too costly to change the cable. They're telling people all sorts of stories. By the time somebody started telling people the truth, by the time we started telling them the truth, just how fed up people are.
Just before I go to Willie, to be fair, and I said in the ODP, and it was a small but only just a little report, and I wanted to say an opinion before I read it, and then see going through it. I think it's very important, it gives us a snapshot of the district, but exactly, and all the different groups doing those five different options for delivering broadband, and three different ways of doing it through community groups now. So, as an information document, brilliant, but it's attacking the problem, agreed, it doesn't promise to tackle the problem, it's just this is what we have in the district. And this is how we can deliver broadband to these houses, but it's not future equipment. So I think, I must commend Liverpool for that coming together. I thought it was excellent, but I totally agree with you. It doesn't deal with the issue. And that's where you have to look at the money coming through with the city deal or the conference. Very
right.
Will
you? How many rural areas have
to
even look at a plan for
this? Will you? Chair, I agree with you. I think it's a useful document. It obviously identifies the need first. We can see very precisely now where the need is. In regards to, I suppose, it's managing expectations from the community as well. It was never going to be a panacea. This document was never going to be identifying the problem to put fibre to the home. That was never going to happen. But it was to identify models that if communities do come together, that there's an option there available, particularly the fibre to the mast option. And there's a number of areas that have installed that, and I was talking to a couple of constituents yesterday about it, and they're very pleased with the internet access. And these were people who couldn't get any access, so they are options available, and it'd be very, I've been very keen about being back to the community, how we get this document to as many people as possible. I'm sure she had to remember that, but some people probably obviously haven't got it. But I think it's important that everybody gets hold of the document and that these can study it in detail as well, and maybe come together as a community. And then I'm just wondering how we're going to then facilitate meetings. Are we going to do it through the DEA structures? If there is a community that's looking for this type of provision, will the council facilitate their meetings for them?
Yes, the key thing you have to remember on this is we are a small player in this. I mean, what we're trying to do is inform ourselves of what the issues are and then pick up on the opportunities that come around from the funds. The one that we've listed there is the Baker Bank voucher scheme, which will be targeted at businesses. We're going to wait and promote that because it's only just been launched. But it's having this information to try to inform areas and target our effort together. A lot of this will be going through the DES structure that we keep together out, but have the caveat that it's out of the form of the table because we're not, as our ideas, we don't have responsibility and we don't have resources, but it's time to inform that debate and get out there and so that they can maximize the opportunity that they can come along from. So that would be the intention.
Thanks, John. And I know there's the Gigabyte Venture Scheme set up on the 9th of January, I'm going to take it next. I think it's important that the councillors are clear on what that scheme is.
I have to agree with Robert and Ryan, so he's not often to agree, but this time the two, I think the whole IT system in Northern Ireland would bring it back. If you're outside the 30 million hour zone, in most of the villages, you don't have to go south on that to get slow broadband. It's a total disaster. And now you call it this time of the year where the Department of Agriculture insists that all applications are filled in online. Farmers are frustrated beyond belief. It's a total disaster. There's a queue on now to the library in the morning, so everything is open. Because if you want to get up and gone, go to the same library, that's got the fast broadband, or what they call that line in. And everybody's like, that's what they're doing now. They just go down to the library and you do their work. There's a problem after a joke. I think all Northern Ireland needs research on. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, just funny, I attended an OECD conference on rural development in last week, and that was from throughout the whole world, all the delegates, that was the biggest thing we believe. It's very big issue, so it's not just over here. You know, we go up into any corner of Italy, Spain, anywhere, they're all very fortunate. You know, even down to Korea's problem. Nobody has been to the rural areas. That's a big difficulty. And the biggest problem is, and I'm not going to forget about it, I'm trying to speak about it, but the biggest issue is the cost, and that's John said. But what I would like to go here really is, you know, we've talked here the most economical one we have in front of us here, it seems, is this B4B spec, which is not. And realistically, John, you know, any idea what cost it is, how many of what can we provide to be able to build this voucher scheme? You know, with the money that we've laid and set up and with the RDP scheme, you know, how does that fit in? Can we achieve much in this?
Well, Chairman, the Gigabyte voucher scheme is there to be available to individual businesses to develop that fiber network to their own business terms. So it's a grant deal that's there. That money's coming from central government in terms of investments or terms to be delivered. Have been successful in the last round for the broadband voucher scheme. In terms of the rural development program, still very much on hold until we see what our needs are in the through this grand conference program term.
Yeah, but I just think, you know, the idea that I really want to favor the mask, you know, what does that cost on average, or is it, you can't even guess any of it, you know?
No, Chairman, it's not the same. If the issue is going to be the challenge of the cost, that's always going to be the issue.
Yeah, but I know the broadband and all these things. It is more expensive. I know that it goes to the cost of all the different areas in Scotland, is where the locals have done the trenches themselves to get the, because of how they did. And I'm surprised at that because if you try to do that here with BT, I presume that they'd say no, if we can't allow you to interfere with the network of roads. Those, but that wasn't the heat under it. I'm very interested to hear how they did it, because local communities did get the majority of the thing, and took a bit of work themselves, which it could be an option.
I think that's exactly just that outline in the report as well, I don't know, B4, where they're taking it down from 85 to 100 meter for the individuals, but if the communities come together and they get in private land, they get access to being in the private land and not offload and not those network, that they can bring it down and have brought it down in England to fight and you know. So something like all that information collated, just as what you said, all the information are collated, it shows you, yes, we all know the scale of the problem, but it shows you that option 1, 2, 3, and 4. And these options aren't feasible. We can't go to the captain, we can't go through the analytical lab lanes, we can't go to the satellite because of the latency, but private and mass is an option going forward. I think bringing that information with the small government, if we're rather than having to make a report, is welcome. Can we get a proposal? Sorry, Harry.
Just welcome report. I'm happy to propose it. Glad to see us happy to spend the daily increase money when we can.
Can I get a second on?
Yeah, I did raise an issue before when similar, probably this one from the previous meeting, about the concern that some 8-9 years ago, I think that this study was carried out where we discovered where all the NAT spots and black spots and all sorts of spots were, but a different screen was being proposed, which, by the way, as did two or three others in the Thanks to councils. I think it may be useful if we got someone in to give us a presentation on exactly where it's all going. You know, we're now talking about the airport, we're going to move on to gigabit ventures and so on. And they talk about on the future and they talk about the speed of the internet and the gigabit. I thought the gigabit was almost in the storage or the amount of data that they can transfer now.
Gigabit,
yeah, but I don't think even on the faster broadband speeds that they have around even close to stations where the travel so fast, I have to say, about 100 megabits or something was the fastest that possible for internet access. So I do think that maybe some of these experts should come in and give us some sort of presentation just to make it clear. Because the passing board has been going on for a number of years. We do invest in a number of different projects because we think we're doing right by the local or certainly the rural community. But I'm not sure that we're not throwing away money out of it. Some of it does make sense to me, that, as you said, and you took a more detailed look at it than I did. But I have to say, some of it's very confusing. We already have the information. Now it's about delivery, who's doing the delivery, and what's the time frame, and so on. And is it realistic that everybody's going to get a fast broadband in rural areas?
I think that's just what I wanted to raise. No, is that where you're heading? Yeah. I think that's what I like about the document. It doesn't just give you information, it gives you the next steps, and says this is how you could achieve this. There is a lot to do, and it needs some. We could talk all day about it, but we've got the polls in a second or so. I'm going to move on, and as I said, I'm going to the aim of this one. I think it's important that we're all clear about the Bidding 20, which is the gigabit voucher scheme. Jonathan, could I just ask to elaborate on the scheme? I know I read on it, it's a bit ambiguous, but customers can pool together in order to increase the value of the voucher. Could that pool together the 500 then to increase up to 300 business can ultimately pool together and get more?
Sure, you can't increase the just with the power of the resources that they can get each and as an individual, trying to maximise it. So I suppose where the idea is where you have a cluster of businesses or a cluster that you just work together to get into that area as opposed to one business trying to go on its own, the 3,000 trying to make being up for their own contribution. So it's power of resources in that regard. Sure, this is similar to the broadband voucher scheme that we would have been involved with back last year and the year before, Chairman, where business, so this is just really moving on. I suppose the next stage is a similar mechanism where business can apply and it's through the Department of Culture, Media and Sports Chairman. So it would be administered by a Belfast the last time around. However, what we're proposing is that we would go out, promote this locally, work with these information seminars to try to maximize the uptake in that. And through our social media platforms as well, certainly through our NMD business and profiles and easy to start with. Thanks very much, John. Any comments on it? No, I'm pretty happy enough. Can I get a pause on tag number? For no?
Yeah.
Pause, press on tag in a second.
If we can't
get some clarification. I don't think those people are in the village area.
Well, which is fiber to the home, possibly, but yeah, I suppose the market can't get into the council, that's what happens. Flyers will be delivered to local businesses as well in areas of urban activity, so every bit helps. Okay, I want to go back to item 14, which is the park and cultural marketing plan. Just see where I am here, John. Item 14, if anyone else. Yeah, Andy.
Yeah, Chair, this is following on from the statement with the development for tourism marketing plan, which was on brought to the committee last month. The proposed paper proposes the same approach as adopted in the we develop a marketing plan for our arts, culture, and heritage offering in the district, and with the aim of increasing our audience numbers in our venues and increasing the engagement of local residents in our arts and culture offering.
Thanks, Andy. Robert?
Sure, if I were to do that there, and I would be very much in support of the arts and culture, and I would propose that they take the recommendation.
Okay. And this approves the marketing year one, isn't it?
Yeah. And Chair, just looking at developing a marketing plan itself, and then that will be brought back to you for approval for year one, can I got a proposal?
Was it going to get a sample? Yes. Okay, item 15, I think it's item 15 in your iPad, sir, is downtown plan for delivery.
Yeah, Chair, this paper sets out the details of the new event that will be delivered in March and June. It's normally based around the major racing festival held on 16th and 17th of June, we're looking at activity events in the Patrick itself, including music, heritage, sports, and cultural events. The paper sets out proposals to work with Down Community Arts to help engage local businesses on the ground and actually deliver the festival itself.
I propose we go with that. Down Arts have worked very hard over the past few years. It's good to see that they're still on the go. From the 14th to the 17th of June, looks very, very good. It's a good festival. Chair, I propose that we accept it.
That's all with
why are we going to have a 7-7 agreement?
Chair, this is looking to formalise a partnership with the community arts to help deliver the project on the ground. So we're looking at, I suppose one of the advantages is if we work in partnership with this group that we can reach Arts Council and I funding to help look at the array of the project and look at the development program that's cohesive with the sports, heritage, culture, arts, activity, all based around the racing.
So, can I take it now and then, there will be an event on a yearly basis in relation to when the races are in the world on here, but that
Chair, and as members will be aware of, we will be getting that program on an annual basis. I would just as that it would be one on an annual basis in relation to the conflict and downtown festival. But that's something for members to review as we move forward.
Okay, thank you, Minister. And thank you, Minister. Thanks, Alan. Brian?
Yes, sir. I would like some more information on that. Is this just a festival that's going to benefit
and Jay, this is very much in the market looking at building upon the success of the numbers that come to the race course, but for the benefit of the businesses in the town. So looking at increasing activity along those lines in terms of culture, music, arts, heritage, for the benefit very much of the local businesses. I mean, I think there's something like over 10,000 race goers go to that festival on the weekend in June, and really we're looking to bring some of that football back into the town for the benefit of the local businesses.
How much are we contributing to the SLA? I don't have any problem with it. I think we should maximize the fact that you have the race goers there and so on. But I think it would be worth buying maybe to give us an idea of what the cost would be.
Yeah, we're working through the details in terms of the actual specific SLA in terms of the activity and we're not the 10,000 that we're looking at in terms of the delivery on the ground activity for this month's fall.
Okay,
Second. Yeah, it's just again, trying to sort of get my head around the difference between this festival and others that have been played before. Not that I disagree with it, but for some guys in the evening, they played behind 10,000 to a community festival, and we had a play for our community festival. Just able to give a coherent and reasonable answer.
Sorry. Yeah, sure, this is a festival, which the new festival which was supposed to bring through the event programme. What we're simply doing here is looking to work to maximise the amount of funding that comes in. You may find that we bring similar papers back in relation to, for example, the Balmain Inch festival is proposed later in the year. So this is us just seeking to find the most effective route to maximise the funding that's available, and we're recommending to the committee that us working with Down Community Arts has a good connection. Would bring that to the committee, but we would still be in control of the budget and we would still be involved in the event.
Yeah, but I don't think that the answer to the question. Somebody probably here says, right, our festival, we had a play for only for this year, for a risk of our festival. Yes, I know that it is, yes, but they all get one from one source, and some other play for not as yet. Because it suits us to do it. And I have absolutely no issue with it. I'm just saying, for the transparency of it, if somebody walks up and says, why did you decide to give it this festival?
And again, sir, I would remind you that we took all of these through the council, and this was one of the council's events and those within the events programme. So this is slightly different than anything that we've been funding. I don't want to get into the name of other events, but if you take other events where we may fund through grant funding, they're not council events, so they're not.
Okay, I'm going to move on to the items. I know we're going to go through all of them before we go back to the exact item. I think the exact item at the end. So moving to, I think it's item 17 on your paper, and that's changed here at Belfast. And Belfast Regional City deal update from them.
Yeah, Chairman, just again, trying to keep members up to date in terms of the work. Members, we're heading towards September, October, to get to a position where we can actually put a deal on the paper for getting deals from the Treasury and the Department of Finance and the government in the UK. Where we've got to in terms of the number of strategic documents which are currently underway, the industrial strategy, digital infrastructure strategy, and folks listening to debate members earlier on, the information has come out of the work that John has talked about again, and tying into that there. Mm-hmm. Money to the conference to play, there's money to actually loan straight to the Treasury, actually how we can work with private sector to deliver some of this fibre to the cap and fibre to the mast. Again, I suppose again, the other piece of work we're doing in terms of tourism power strategy, again, skills and work we're doing in terms of like universities in terms of education. So I suppose we're bringing that to a level now. We've got identified the key infrastructure projects which are there for UKT, Newcastle, and your city centre regeneration, so going to be called Wormbite Marina and the Digital Infrastructure Programme. Where we are now getting into discussion with central government, our regional governments, should I say, is with government departments to say in terms of where they plug in these or where they want to agree on these. So again, Chairman, we hope to have a meeting with them, the last meeting we had with them, cross members working group was in February, hopefully just having it on the side of the summer, and again moving to a point where hopefully we're going to be tracking down the key projects that we want to fund. So Chairman, just really conscious that this is key strategic piece of work that the council is doing, and I want to keep members fully informed on that basis.
Thanks, Jim. And I suppose that was, you know, on the comments that was overflow on the last paper on the ODP broadband study. And that's why it's so important when you look at the city deal. I think you get money in the deal, that pieces of work done, you know, exactly what the issues are across the district. Although it is frustrating that, you know, there's money isn't that little bit right now. But I do also want to say, as I tried going through, we had the presentation from the Warren Bank Power, and again, to see the Southern Reef Road on here, unfortunately, as a strategic project, the council has to be welcomed. And also the tie into the skills forum and what we said earlier on, and how that is a key piece of work. I think it ties in nicely to the city. Maybe the proposal on the second up of the object, maybe, and Waiter. Okay. Moving on to item 18, which is the team of delegation. You propose a second? Proposed second, second, Nicky. Item 18 is the Castle Welland Forest Park. No comments so far. I'm proud to have Castle Welland Forest Park, Castle Finish Report. So, proposed second, Robert. Proposed Nicky. Robert, second, Robert. Item 19, yes, NLP. Update. Proposed second. Proposed Nicky. Second off. Wait. We dealt with item 20, item 21 again, just proposing second for the action track update feature. Proposed Nicky. Second. And the master plan update. Proposed second. Terry and Harry. Item 23, the tourism events program. Just before we go to propose on second, I just want to welcome the additional funding from Tourism NIE, the additional funding across some of the festivals there, which is on top of the funding already, so that's extremely welcome. Try to propose on second. Propose Harry and second. Thank you. Item 24, the Tourism Partnership Marketing Fund. Propose on second. Propose Robert and second. Second, yeah. Sorry. 25 is the report of the Joint Labour Committee meeting. Proposed on second. Second and debit. And finally, for number 11, DSC, regarding special architectural or historic interest. Proposed on second. Proposed way and second by Councillor Borges. Okay, I'm going to go back to the exempt item. Item 15, State Building Courtyard and Leases of the Wall Garden Shed. This item is deemed to be restricted by Direction Paragraph 3, Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act 1940. Information related to the financial of business affairs of any particular person between the council holding that information and the public may, by resolution, be excused to general the item of business. Can you propose the item of the committee?
Proposed.
The heat and Direction. Okay. At the end of the meeting, say it's
a meeting now.
Sorry, yes. Proposed just on. So item 15, see by the courtyard, lease the wall yard and shed. Proposed to enter into the lease for 1 year. For 1 year, subject to an annual review on the basis of agreeing the terms of the lease and appropriate valuation. And the proposal was Councillor Terry Hardy and Councillor Gary Stokes Sackless. Set from home.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.